This morning will be in Genesis chapter 11, starting verse 1. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach to heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad from the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of the whole earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from there did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. And these are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. And Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. And Arphaxad lived 35 years and begat Selah. And Arphaxad lived after he begat Selah 403 years and begat sons and daughters. And Selah lived 30 years and begat Eber. And Selah lived after he begat Eber 403 years and begat sons and daughters. And Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. And Peleg lived 30 years and begat Reu. And Peleg lived after he begat Reu 209 years and begat sons and daughters. And Reu lived 2 and 30 years, and begat Serug. And Reu lived after he begat Serug 207 years and begat sons and daughters. And Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor. And Serug lived after he begat Nahor 200 years and begat sons and daughters. And Nahor lived 29 years and begat Terah. And Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. And Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abraham, Nahor, Haran, and Haran begat Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abraham and Nahor took them wives, and the name of Abram's wives was Sarai, and the name of the Nahor's wife was Milcah, and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren and had no child. And Terah took his son, Lot, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his wife, his daughter-in-law, his son's Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go to the land of Canaan. And they came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. I know some of the genealogy's tough. We'll get through it. Back to the first verse again. And the whole earth was what? The word of in this verse, there's two little words called of that's added words. So it shouldn't be of, it should be the earth was one language and one speech, period. Okay? One language, one speech. What would be another good word for that? They were united. No, they weren't talking about united with God. They were united to humanity. Okay? And see, there's the misconception that we have a lot of times about being united. People think that we have to be together naturally. Okay? They think we have to be together naturally to be united. Is that a truth? See, because when the people were united in the natural, they began to do something that was very ungodly. They begin to build idolatry. See, so it's not just about everybody getting together and shaking hands and hugging and saying, hey, I love you, brother, and see you next week. See, the fellowship isn't what it's all about. There's a lot more than that. So God looks down and he sees these people all united in the natural realm. True? It's not about spiritual realm, is it? They were united in the natural. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east. What did the east represent? What? Yeah.
Yeah.
The beginning. And where did their beginning start from? In God. So they journeyed away from the east. When humanity gets together, their human thinking is not directed toward God, is it? It's always going west or south. And guess where they're going? To a place of comfort. Okay? They're going to those places of comfort. And that's what humanity is about. What do you think that humanity's technology is all about? God promises you something. Health, peace, and prosperity. True or false? And you know what humanity is trying to do? They're trying to find health, peace, and prosperity through technology to replace God so they're not obligated to anybody. Think about it. Did you hear that? They don't need it. It's self-made, everything they want. It's humanistic. It's self-centered. We want to do it all for ourselves, and I'm not obligated to anybody. Right? That's not what God said. He wants us to depend upon Him, doesn't He? For every detail. So anyway, they took off from the east, and they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Now, what does the word Shinar mean? Two rivers. Now, let's break the two rivers down. What is a river? What's it consist of? Water. What is water? It's moving, living, flowing water, which is the Word of God. There's two sources there. Doesn't that kind of sound like the knowledge of good and evil in the tree of life? Huh? Two sources. Sure. Two sources from their understanding comes from two sources. So they come to a place with duality, and there's where they choose to dwell. Doesn't that kind of sound like humanity? They choose to live in a place of duality. You know why? Sounds like a politician. You can't corner them. See, the highest office in the land is called an oval office. It's round, has no corners, so you can't corner them in there, can you? Right? Okay, my joke didn't go over too good. No, never do. And they dwelt there. They chose to remain there. Okay? And they said one to another, not go to, come on. Come on. That's what it should say. Come on, not go to, but come on. Let's do these things. Let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for what? For stone, and slime they had for mortar. Now, let's spiritualize it a little bit. And said, let's make some brick. And you know, God said He's not going to have a temple made with stones made from man, shaped by the hand of man, right? It's going to be natural stones built by the Spirit, okay? Anyway, they decided to build them a temple here, this big tower they're going to build. And it said they're going to have brick. After they put this clay together, literally the word brick should say white clay. They use white clay. It's man's idea of symbolism to make it in the place of God. And it says they use white clay for stone, okay? Who was the stone? Christ was the chief cornerstone. So they're going to try to take their man-made white bricks and put them in place of God. Build their own tabernacle. See, that's what the mind of humanity does when they're all turned loose with them cherubim. And they had slime for mortar. What do you think the slime holding those bricks together was? Huh? How about flesh? The slime in the humanity of thinking, the thinking of humanity, slime. Huh? It's gray matter. It's slime. What I'm saying is, what held the bricks of humanity together is the thinking of humanity. If you think human, what are you doing? You're supporting humanity, aren't you not? Are you not? So when you take this slime, it's going to hold together, and that's basically what it is. It's slime. My slimy thinking. Okay? That's cool, isn't it? And they use that for mortar. That's to hold their thinking together. They use human thinking to hold their human thinking bricks together. Okay? And they said, come on, let us build us a city and a tower. Let us build a city and a tower for who? Us. Who is us? It's humanity. Let us build something to tell how great we are. Every civilization all through time, look back at all, even the Incas, they don't even know what happened to them, but they have some towers built to remember them by, don't they? Everybody's trying to make a name for themselves in humanity. Is that true or false? And I mean, people don't have to build a big tower today. They can be a famous person and build themselves a tower, can't they? See, that's what humanity, that's the thinking in humanity. Is that a bad thing? It's just a landmark of who they are. But, I mean, everybody has it, but we have to come to a place where we're no longer a person of reputation. It's not about being important, it's about being Christ. Being the Christ we've been called to do and to be. Not trying to make ourselves famous. If you're trying to be the one receiving attention, you miss the whole point. I had a man one time tell me when I was sitting under him years ago, he came to my house, he told me, he said, he gave me and my wife a tearing, he said, I don't want you to do any more ministering anymore. I don't want you to let anybody come in your house, don't have any more studies, don't minister to anybody, don't talk to them on the telephone, if they call you, tell them to call me, if they come to your house, don't let them in your house, tell them to come and see me. And I said, what's the problem? He said, I'm the pastor and you're getting too much attention and I'm supposed to get it. I said, really? Is that the way it's supposed to be? I said, I thought this was something we're doing for God and He was supposed to get the attention. It's for His glory, not for yours, not for mine. I'm just a servant here. But he was jealous because people was orienting to Lois and I. They were focusing on us for help because he would never help them. That's all. We didn't get anything out of it except to help the people. Except we got crashed a few times, didn't we? We got cracked a lot of times. But it's okay. We were learning, okay? But he said, let us build us a city. Let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is to heaven. Not may reach to heaven, is to heaven. Now, the reason I say that, those words, if you see there, may reach are what? They're italicized, they're added words. Now, when it says may reach, what does it make you think of? If that we're going to build a tower and its top will reach to heaven, what are we thinking of? Okay. It's how far out there is it going? It's going to reach clear up there to the sky. And that's not the concept that God's wanting you to talk about. He said they're the top, let me say it again so I get it right. Let me look at it. He says, excuse me, and let us make us a name, and no, higher, let us build us a city and a tower whose top is to the heaven. Now I'll show you another concept that makes it right. Because there's not enough building material on the whole face of the earth to build a foundation for a tower that would reach as high as the sky as the first planet or star. There's not enough material to build it. Just the foundation, much less the tower. The foundation would have to be bigger than this earth, wouldn't it, Bob?
Considerably. Not like the size of the solar system.
Yeah, it'd have to be way bigger than this, see? So it couldn't even possibly be. So we know that concept in the natural is a carnal thought, to think that it would reach all the way up there. But what it is, when it says it builds a top, is to the heavens, what's it saying? It's dedicating it to the heavens. It's like these, what do they call these rooms, it's domed, that they've got the pictures of the sky up there, the stars and all that? Solarium? Is that what they call it? Yeah. That's what they were building. They were building a tower where they would worship the sun, moon, and stars.
Planetarium.
There you go. It was like a planetarium. They built it inside and had all the stars and everything planted. And they were worshiping there, inside there, to the stars. Now, they missed something. See, they got part of the truth and ran off. See, he is the day star. But they're not worshiping him, the day star. They was actually worshiping the physical stars and the moon and the sun. There's what was going on. And that's what's built into humanity. If God is not the center of your universe, you will worship something else. I promise you. Because there's a spirit of religion in every one of us that will want to worship something. We'll want to make something an idol in our lives. If it's not God, we'll find something else. That's the way humanity does things, okay? And he said, let us make ourselves a name, lest we be scattered upon the face of the whole earth. What's that saying? They want to make themselves a name, lest they be scattered from the whole earth. Tell me what's driving that thinking process. Well, I see something here different. I see fear, lest we be scattered from off the face of the earth. They're worried about separation, isolation. It's fear, isn't it? Fear drives people in isolation. They make some bad decisions sometimes out of isolation. So there's a fear driving these people, and that's humanity is driven by what? They're on a slime shift. Yep, they're sliding. But anyway, they want to make themselves a name. They want notoriety. And in the Old Testament, in these days, when people made themselves a name, what was their name for? Huh? Well, but no, I'm saying as a group of people, like a nation. And this was like a nation was trying to make a name for themselves. It was out of fear again. They want to be like, we're big and we're bad and y'all better not mess with us. That's what they were trying to put out. Put out a reputation that nobody would bother them and they could live in peace. See, we have a desire to live in peace, but we take the wrong way to get to it. See, you can't have peace by making war. Okay? I know there was some famous man in the past that if you want peace, you got to prepare for war, but I don't believe that. Jesus said he wanted peace, so he came down and suffered to bring it forth. He brought peace by suffering on a cross, didn't he? He didn't hurt anybody, and he even told Peter, put up your sword. Quit trying to fight. You live by the sword, you'll die by the sword. We live by the word, we'll be all right. Okay? Into verse 5. And Yahweh came to see the city and the tower which the children of humanity, or Adam, built. Okay? So he came to see what Adam built. Adam speaking of who? And that's what that word is right there. It's Adam. It's humanity. See what humanity built. We already saw in Genesis 6 that the mind of humanity is always evil when it's left to itself. True or false? Okay. So God left them to themselves and immediately they started doing something that was an abomination to God. They started using their own thinking instead of relying on Him. And Yahweh said this. Father says, behold, the people are united. What it says is, one should say is united. And they have all one language, and this they began to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. What's the limitation in humanity? Only what you can imagine. Takes me to the cherubim, doesn't it? When they were taken out of the garden, what was placed at the gates? Cherubim. You look up the word cherubim, what is it? It's imaginary creatures. See, or creatures of your imagination. So when it's imaginary creature, tell me what the first thing comes to your mind. Not real. Imaginary creatures are not real. Okay? It's things in our mind. It's imaginations. All of us have the ability to imagine things, don't we? Some more vivid than others. And those imaginations are what leads us astray. We imagine something. Just take a man and woman that's having a relationship together, and one or the other is separated from the one, and what's the first thing that goes through their mind? What are they doing? Oh my, are they doing this or are they doing that? Isn't it true? It happens. What should you do according to Scripture? Take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. If I'm truly standing in the Word, I will not be worried if my wife gets on a plane, flies across the country, and is gone for 2 or 3 weeks. I'm not going to be worried if she outrunning with another man. I got no control in that. All I can do is serve God the best way I can. If I want to live in the coulds and shoulds and maybes, I will be in total confusion the rest of my life. I'll never have peace. Okay? You got to learn to walk on your foundation that you've built in Christ. In verse 7 he says, Come, let us go down and there confound or confuse their language in order that they may not, what? The word understand is the word shama. It means to hear intelligently with the intent to respond. He said, let's confound their language so they cannot hear intelligently and respond to what was been said. If the man says, go get me 20 bricks, and he comes back with 5 buckets of slime, can't get the job done, can he? Okay. Because they don't understand what they're saying to each other. In Amos it says this, how can two walk together except they be agreed? Correct? Okay, if we can't agree on something, we can't agree on a communication level or some way of communicating, how are we ever going to get anything accomplished? If I'm walking north and you're walking west and somebody else working south, how are we ever going to get together? It's not going to work. See, we're going opposite directions from each other. We've got to get in the same direction. And that's what he was doing here. He was confounding everything. So they can't understand or hear intelligently one another's language. How many times have you said something and someone misunderstands you? Every day of our lives, someone misunderstands what we say, the intent of what you're saying. And see, if it happens that commonly and we're all speaking the same language, what do you think it would have been like when everybody started speaking a different language? What do you think it would be in this room today if we're trying to communicate and every one of us talked with a different language and we didn't understand nothing but our own language? Yeah, I've been there. But I'm saying, what would be the purpose of it if we couldn't understand? There's no purpose of it. So we got to get something. We have to be united. That part they had right. But they were united in their carnal thinking and not in the thinking of God. There was the problem. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there upon the face of the whole earth, and they left off to build the city. Their fear came about to get them, didn't they? Oh yeah, the Lord did it. Wasn't no demon or devil, was it? Let me take you to a verse in Job. Think about it real quick. It's in Job chapter 1, verse 5. And it was so when the days of their fasting were gone about that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. Because Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. Now, what was the problem here with him? It was out of fear and insecurity that he was trying to sanctify someone else. The very fear they had, and they said, let's go do this so we won't get scattered upon the earth. Let's make a name for ourselves. And what did God turn around and do? The very thing that they had a fear of is the very thing that came upon them, isn't it? He scattered them abroad from off the face of the earth and left off to build the city. Therefore, the name of it is called Babel. What is the word Babel or Babel? You can call it either way you want to. What does it mean? No, more than that. Confusion by mixing is what the language says. That means there has to be at least two to be mixing, doesn't it? So when we see two things, we know there can be a duality or a mixing, right? It's not a mixture unless you got two things. So it's confusion by mixing or religious confusion. And when we say confused mixing or religious mixing, it's because we have taken the truth of a true religion of God, not the natural, this man-made stuff. We took the truth of God and then we watered it down by putting our thinking processes in it. You have to come to a point in your life where you say this, my natural thinking will do nothing but deceive me, because the natural mind will deceive you. It's the accuser. So if I come to that point and understand it, then I can't think too highly of my thinking process, can I? Why do you think God has told us, put on the mind of Christ multiple times? Because His thinking process is much superior to ours. True or false? Didn't He say His ways are above our ways, His mind is above our mind? See, it's got a higher plane of thinking than we can even think on with our little carnal minds. But when we change and exchange this thing and remove the carnal and come in with the mind of Christ, which is no more than the mind of God, Jesus said, I and the Father are one. Well, then they both have the same thinking process, don't they? So if we, and his prayer was in John 17, make them one with us, with me as I am one with you. So guess what mind we've got on? The mind of the Father. Through the mind of Christ is the same thing, the mind of the Father. Because he's thinking exactly like the Father. Okay? So anyway, they called it Babel because of the confusion by mixing, or the religious confusion. Because Yahweh, that's the Father, did there what? Literally, the word confound is confuse or mix. He confused or mixed their languages up. Of all the earth, and from there did the Lord scatter them upon the face of all the earth. Who did it? The Lord did it. God, Father, did that. Okay, verse 10. These are the generations or the family history of Shem. Shem speaks of what? A renown, right? Nature, character. This word comes from the word shame, which is name, honor, nature, honor, character, and authority. And Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad. Now, there's some things in here in this genealogy. When we get to the years, there's some problems with their translations of it, and I'll show them to you in a second. There's several of them. He was 100 years old when he begat Arphaxad, and Arphaxad means, I shall fail as the breast. Now, why would anyone say something like that? I shall fail as the breast. He has nothing to feed, but you know what? The breast can't sustain you forever. It's only as a baby can the breast sustain you, and then you must have some meat to eat. Can't stay in baby land or Babylon or whichever way you want to say it, you know, forever. You got to move on. You got to grow up. And he said, he begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. No, it's not. Huh? I can't hear you. Why? It could. But it says, it should say a year. The word two is the letter A. It's a year. Didn't say 2 years. It said a year after the flood. So when that came out, they probably celebrated. Okay? And he got Arphaxad. And Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. Okay? So how old was he? Shem was 100 years old when he begat Arphaxad. So how old was Shem when he come off the ark? Question. 99. 1 year off. It's 1 year off. Okay. He was 99. And now, when Abram begat Isaac, how old was he? That's a coincidence, I'm sure. There's something there, huh? Okay. Shem lived after he begat him 500 years. So how old would that make him when he died? Old, yeah, 600 years. And Arphaxad lived 35 years and begat Selah. What does Selah mean? It's a sprout. So he begat a root, a branch off of him, right? Just like Jesus was the sprout, the branch, the vine, all those different things. Mm-hmm. Something like a different generation, huh? Now, 35. Let me show you something. On the board here, we'll draw something. 35. Now, we can look at this way. 30 and 5 is halfway to what? 40. Right? 30 and a half. Okay. How many years did Jesus minister? 33 and a half. 3 Three and a half. Say, just say three and a half is what I'm talking out of. Three and a half. Okay? It's just something I can see in there, a pattern, that this man began to minister something, a sprout, a root, divine, after 35 or 35, the 3.5 years. And 3.5 years was his time of ministry, correct, on the earth? And Arphaxad lived after he begat Selah. He begat Selah 403 years and begat sons and daughters. How old was he when he died? 438. It's not critical that you know these numbers. I'm just telling them to you. Okay? I'm just telling them to you. And Selah lived 30 years and begat Eber. Eber means what? The region beyond. And Selah lived after he begat Eber 403 years. So that made him a total of what? 433 years. And begat sons and daughters. And Eber lived 34 years and begat Peleg. Peleg means what? An earthquake or division. Earthquake or division. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. And he died at the age of 464 years. And Peleg lived 30 years and begat Reu. Reu means friend. And Peleg lived after he begat Reu not 209 years, but 109 years. The word two again is should be 100, not 200. 109 years and begat sons and daughters. So he died at the age of what? 139. And Reu lived 32 years, or 32 years, and begat Serug. Serug speaks of a branch. B-R-A-N-C-H. Branch. And Reu lived, and he begat, lived after he begat Serug 207 years, and begat sons and daughters. His years of life was 139 years. And Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor. Nahor means what? What?
Snorting.
Snorting or snoring? Somebody might be asleep, huh? In a deep sleep. And Serug lived after he begat Nahor 100 years, not 200 years. So that would make his life on this earth is 130 years. And he begat sons and daughters. And Nahor lived 9 and 20 years, or 29 years, and begat Terah. Terah. What's his name mean? Station or delay? Okay, delay is the major word there for him. It causes delay. Okay? And Nahor lived, after he begat Terah, 119 years, and begat sons and daughters. Makes his time of life on this earth as 148 years. And Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Again, Abram's name means exalted father or high father. Nahor is the snorer or the snorter. And Haran is the mountaineer. Okay? The natural man, the big strong man. Speaking of all three realms, Abraham would be one, Nahor 2, and Haran 3, and that's in the reverse order. Abraham being the highest realm, really. Okay? More seed. Mm-hmm. They started producing earlier and earlier. Well, it really doesn't, you know, in the history, there's a reason for it. There has to be seed scattered on the whole earth, and few people's not going to do it. He needed lots of people to bring forth his plan. Okay? Verse 27, now these are the generations of Terah, and his name again means delay, and Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran begat Lot. Now the name Lot represents something. The word, the language, it said his name means covering, Okay, but what does that covering represent? The flesh. It's the flesh. Okay. Lot begat some sons that were the same thing he was, incestuous sons. And Haran died before, or in the presence of, it should say, his father Terah, in the land of his nativity. Or the land of his what? Birth. In Ur of Chaldees. What does the word Ur mean? Flame. Flame. Of Chaldees. What does Chaldees mean? It means, there's several meanings to it. Clodbreaker is one. A wise people. They were astrologers and they were moon worshippers. Okay? They were pagans, in other words. Okay? They were pagans. So, Haran died in the presence of his father, who was lagging behind, in the land of his birth, in the flames of paganism. And flames and paganism will come out more in this story later on. We'll get to that later. Can't get in this chapter. And Abram and Nahor took them wives, and the name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. Now notice something here. Let's look at a pattern. I'm going to do something on the board here for a minute. I want you to see a pattern. There was three covenants, right? Is that correct? There was three covenants. How many sons did Terah have? Three sons. Okay. Now, in the covenant that God made, all those covenants that he made, in the book of Revelation, he said, don't measure the what? And in the tabernacle, there was three divisions, wasn't there? Okay. Three divisions. They were all separated here. And in the outer court, he said, do away with one of them. You minus one of them, right? What just happened to Terah's sons? There was three of them. One of them died. And how many was left? Two. So guess what? It's a pattern of the new covenant coming into effect right here. Because in the new covenant, the old covenant is outer court, holy place, and holy of holies. In the new tabernacle of Hebrews chapter 8, guess what there is? There was an older view of the tabernacle, then there was a new tabernacle. It said there was a new tabernacle made, Christ. And in that new tabernacle, there's only two divisions. The holy place and the holy of holies, the outer court's done away with. The same pattern that we find right here in Genesis. Now, people say this hasn't been put together by God, that men put this all together. I don't believe there's a human being smart enough to put all this together. There's no one that smart. You would have missed something. And there is nothing missed in this book. Nothing. The only thing that we miss in this book is what we can't pick up because of the lack of our understanding. That's our problem. Okay. I didn't give you in verse 29, Sarai, what's her name mean? What? That's one view of it, but there's another view to it. Diminutive, dominative. A dominator. Okay? What's he talking about? See, he's talking about his wife, but is he really talking about his wife? He's talking about his soulish realm, and that female side is very dominating. How hard is it to tell yourself to shut up? Huh? How hard is it for you to tell your desires to shut up and sit down? Very difficult. And that's why he says that her name was very controlling and dominating. Okay? We have to learn to tell her to shut up. We're not talking about people here. We're talking about ourselves. And the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. What does Milcah mean? Queen. Okay? Now, we can see that in a positive way or a negative way. Most people want to say, oh, queen. Well, she was the king's wife. No, that's not what we're talking about. There's a way that a queen can be a bad thing. If someone thinks they're a queen and they're not, we got a problem. Because they're trying to draw everything to themselves. Huh? She'll be very rebellious. Okay, at least. Very rebellious. And the father of Iscah. What does the word Iscah mean? One who looks forth, an observant person. Someone, an observer. You might even see that as a person who is an astrologer, someone looking into things, you know. There's a lot of things you can see because we're into moon worship and paganism in this society we're talking about. They're pagans. But Sarai was barren and she had no what? Now this language goes a little deeper than the word son. It says she had no boy or no man child. She didn't have a boy. In their society, it says no child, but it doesn't say she didn't have a girl. It says she didn't have a boy. And in their society, if you didn't bring forth a man child, you didn't bring forth any children, did you? See, their whole manhood was built upon the fact that they could produce sons. They didn't take consideration that their daughters were even of any importance. That's the way it was in the culture. It wasn't right, but that's the way it was. Okay? It doesn't say that she had no children at all. It said she was barren. She had no man child. And in their culture, barren, if you only had women, children, you were barren as far as they was concerned because you didn't produce what they wanted out of you. They wanted a man. Huh? They wanted the heir. And Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, or his nephew, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. Well, that don't sound like a very good change, really, does it? No. They're moving. He said, but I want you to go from... They went from the Ur of Chaldees, the flames of paganism, into the land of Canaan, which is a low land. It's a place of starting. It's a place of humility. Be humbled there, okay? And they came to Haran, and they dwelt there. What does Haran stand for? It's a parched place. It's a burnt, dry place. There's no moisture, no anointing. You get in a dry place when God's not in your life, and you know what? Something's going to happen. Something's going to change one way or the other right there. Sooner or later, it's got to break when you're in that dry place. When things are dry, how easy are they to break? You take things that's real wet and moist and you just bend them. See, they won't break. But when you get in a place of no moisture, things will break, crack, dry easily. And he says, and they dwelt there. They chose to stay there. See, it wasn't like they just went there and said, ho-hum, we're here. They just sit down. Just like they made a decision to stay there. And I've made a decision, I made a statement a long time ago about suffering and pain. Okay? You'll stay the same until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of the change. So you'll get in this dry place in your life and you'll only stay there until you can't stand it anymore. No matter how bad you don't want to change, you can stay here as long as the pain of staying here is less than the pain of that change. Do you hear me? And that's what we have to do in our life. Sooner or later, God's going to turn the heat up so hot that we're going to move. And until that time, we're going to sit there and grit our teeth and say, I'm doing fine. Isn't that the way people do it? Come on, I've been guilty of the same thing. I just started to grit my teeth and sit right in the middle of it. And say, everything's fine. Lie to everybody I see. Tell them everything's fine. Nothing's wrong. I know it's better than that. But I've learned from it. And God's grace and mercy's on that. But eventually we will move. Another one of the things that God gave me in my understanding was about freedom. Because see, this is what this is all about, freedom. People think they're free when they can make their own decisions. And freedom is not doing what you want. Freedom is living within God's limitations and God's boundaries and being happy there. And the word is being happy to be there. Okay? No matter where He has put you. Whatever lot you're in, learn to be content therewith. Okay? It's not easy. This isn't an easy walk. If it was easy, wouldn't everybody be lined up on it? Because I'm going to tell you, humanity don't like pressure. They don't like it. I don't like it. But you know what I've found? That pressure that God applies to my life makes me worth more to Him. Because when I get the pressure put on me, I've got to turn loose of something. I've got to let loose of something. I cannot hold on to everything and catch the lifeline He throws. I've got to open my hands up and release some things. And in the third day, it says in the book of Acts, they lightened the ship with their own hands. They tossed some things out. They didn't have to hang on to them anymore. And I guarantee you, if you followed the Jews, the Israelites, through the desert for 40 years, there was a trail of trash all the way from where they started and to where they came back, where they came into the Promised Land. There was trails of trash. Something that somebody thought was valuable when they left, but by the time they got there, it just didn't seem quite as valuable anymore. And the days of Terah were 105 years. And Terah, it says two, but the language doesn't say it. It says 105 years. And he died in Haran, in that dry, parched place. I'm going to stop there, because next week we're going to have a good one. If we got any questions, I'll answer the questions.
Yes.
Okay. Question.
Statement, knowledge, mind of God, perspective.
Say it again. I didn't hear you.
Huh?
Say it again. I didn't hear you.
Well, I'm starting off with knowledge,
yeah,
in the mind of God.
Right.
In perspective.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I've got a question of the people involved in this tower construction.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make themselves a name in heaven because they were afraid of being scattered.
Well, let me say something. You're very close to what I'm seeing. They tried to make a name in the earth, not in the heavens. They were making it by worshiping the towers. They thought they would make themselves famous all over the earth. Okay.
Why do they have a fear of being scattered?
Because they didn't know their identity.
Why did God want to scatter?
Because it wasn't yet time for us to come together in all the things. And today, humanity is coming back together at a greater pace than they've ever before done.
So there's no physical tower ever built?
No, I don't think there was a physical tower ever built. I think they were starting to build one, but I really think it's in here. The greatest thing is here. We build this tower in here in our mind.
And there's that big kind of pride. And there's also something in there, I think, that we, I don't know whether you intentionally went over it or not, is about the brick being burnt.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The brick doesn't have any strength until the carbon molecules in the mortar
are hardened by the flame.
Yeah. What's the meaning of that, do you think?
Well, the testing and trials. See, that represents the testing and trials.
The testing and trials are bonded.
Well, testing and trials, I say, because fire really isn't pushed into the point of bonding in all the other scriptures and everything. They were already united. They were trying to build something, and it was in tests and trials, and they were trying to eliminate it, their tests and trials, by making their own brick and burning it themselves and doing everything themselves rather than letting God set forth their life the way He wanted it set forth. They were trying to make an alternative lifestyle from what God has set up.
Mm-hmm. Is what makes you know what you know that you know.
Sure it is.
And then from there you got the strength to go out.
And do more. And get into more tests and trials. Absolutely.
Harder ones, but you can do it because you're strong.
Again, as everything we're saying in here was unnatural, let me reiterate that everything... No, but I said there was a natural occurrence. If there was, it doesn't make any difference to me. It's an example of what's going on spiritually in each one of us. That's what this story is really about, isn't it?
I don't believe that people with that physical belief they could actually build a physical tower.
Well, not a tower all the way up there.
No, after about 400 or 500 feet, just the way later the structure itself was destroyed.
Right. Well, that wasn't what it was, but they were building a physical tower with the painted stars and the moon inside of that planetarium thing. You know, that's what they were building. Something to worship the stars through that building. Just like the church world today thinks you have to have a building to worship God. Isn't it true? If you don't have one of them sharp pointy things and stained glass windows and crosses hanging on everything, you're not worshiping God according to them.
Would that be kind of competition with everything else, the one to be the biggest, the baddest?
Sure. They want to be the biggest, baddest church in the land. That's why they build the big things, you know, they build. And that's not what it's about. But yet it's the same nature in people today. Look at our community today. We got a bunch of churches tore down all their churches or sold them to somebody else and build a great big church, and they think if we build this great big monument to our organization, everybody will come to it. Is it any different than that Tower of Babel? Same pattern. Same pattern in this book. That's the same pattern. Sure it is. Absolutely.
So
they were worshiping it.
Worshiping it because it was the greatest thing that they saw in their time.
In their day, they had nothing else. And all God was doing was using this as an example. Like he said in Genesis 6, when man is left to himself, his heart is continually evil. Okay, it didn't mean he's going out chopping people up. It just means they're not going to worship God the way they're intended to do. Okay? Anything that's not godly is what? It's evil in God's eyes. If it's either godly or it's evil. If it's humanistic, it's evil. Doesn't mean they have to be monsters cutting and chopping people up, does it? So that's what it's all about, letting us see how we will do things if God is in our lives. And how many people have been told that God wasn't in your life most of your life? Hasn't everybody been told that? You need to get God in your life. If God wasn't in your life, you wouldn't draw the first breath. No. Absolutely. And see, I mean, that's foolishness. When you understand that God is in all humanity, and you can go to Genesis 2:7 and see the very first human being that was ever formed. And he was formed out of the dust, and the breath of God was breathed into him, and he became a living soul. Same way with you. You was formed out of the dust between a man and a woman, your mother and father. And the Spirit of God breathed the breath of life into you, and that's why you are. It's no different than the day that Adam was formed. That's the pattern. And if we can take this thing and quit trying to put it into the heavens somewhere, but put it into yourself, you can walk this life with no condemnation, with no guilt. You'll make mistakes. I promise you'll make the mistakes. But that's what grace and mercy is all about. And you'll walk your life, you'll make your mistakes, you'll learn from them, and the next time you won't repeat them. That's the grace and mercy of God. That's what God is trying to teach us. Just like Bub said a while ago, if you don't make mistakes, what will you learn? You got to experience this stuff so you can learn it. If I tell you about it, it's not going to stick in your heart. But when I tell you something and you walk out of here and in your life this next week or so, you start experiencing the things we've talked about, what's it going to do to you? What's going to ring upstairs when it starts happening? Well, you're going to have accusation, but you're going to remember the things that you've already been over and said, oh, now I'm experiencing those things. See, now I'm experiencing what we've talked about. And see, just listening to it, it's just knowledge. But it's not wisdom until you've experienced it. And you've got to experience life. And the church world has tried to keep you from experiencing everything. Don't touch, don't taste, don't smell. You don't do nothing. Don't do nothing. Just sit in the box and pay your tithes. That's all they want you to do. And that's not God. God put all this out here for you to experience so you can learn what's right from wrong without condemnation and guilt, because there's no condemnation in Christ.
I listen to so-called Christianity voice itself, and it gives me two choices. I can either be an atheist or a heretic.
Mm-hmm.
I see no other choice.
No, they don't give you any.
I choose to be a heretic.
Well, Paul chose, he said, I'm a heretic, what they've accused me of. Paul claimed to be a heretic. They accused me, he said, I'm a heretic according to what they've charged me with, because I choose to worship my God in the way that he wants and not the way they want. Okay? It's the way it is. You know, you have to learn to walk alone in this world. Even to walk with somebody, you got to learn to walk alone. It's tough. But you're really not alone, but you have to kind of be in the desert for a season for him to really work on you. You got to be there. Every man or woman of this book walked in a desert place. Every one of them. What, you think that's just a coincidence? That every man or woman of God walked in the desert?